Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Yevamos Daf Ayin Beis. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara Marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's shiur 4 lines from the top of Daf Ayin Beis Amud Aleph. At the end of our previous shiur, we had made mention of the fact that the Jewish people, during the 40 years in the Midbar, did not practice bris milah. There was an issue of health and life endangerment, and the Gemara explained that one of the reasons suggested was that the northerly wind did not blow, and that northerly wind provided environmental circumstances that would be helpful for a proper bris milah. Since the northerly wind wasn't blowing, so those circumstances didn't exist, hence they were restricted from doing the bris milah during those 40 years. And now the Gemara asks, why was that so? My taima. So iboy seima, one approach says, if you like, you can say, mishum denizoifen havu. They were the subject of the Almighty's anger. Now, what was the source of the Almighty's wrath with the Jewish people that caused him to restrain the northerly wind from blowing during the day? So Tosfos points out, quotes the opinion of Rabbi Yitzchak. He says that was a result of the Maase Meraglim, from the episode involving the evil report, the negative report of the spies sent by Moshe Rabbeinu to scout out Eretz Yisrael. And he adds, the Tosfos says, not like Rashi suggests, that it was a function of the golden calf, the Maase Egel. Because as far as the Maase Egel is concerned, we see that the Almighty forgave them for that. Well, let's turn back to the Gemara. V'iboy esema, another explanation as to why the northerly wind did not blow during those 40 years. Delo nivdor. Nivdor is scatter. So that the anane hakavod, delo nivdor, anane hakavod, the clouds of glory that surrounded the Jewish population as they traveled in the desert, that so that they should not scatter, so this northerly wind did not blow. Omar Rapapa, Hilkoch Yoima Da'eva, Vyoima Deshusa, Rapapa therefore concludes that on a cloudy day, or on a Yoima Deshusa, that's a day that the southerly wind is blowing. Lo Malinon Bay, Velo Mesukrinon Bay. Those are days that one should not circumcise. Mahalinon is mohel, like the word for someone who is who does the actual cutting, the mohel, mahalinon bay, we do not do the circumcision. Velo misukrinon bay, we do not bloodlet. Vehoidna, however, the Gemara adds, nowadays, we, as the Gemara is speaking at a point later in time than Rav Papa, apparently people aren't so concerned with those factors and go ahead and do it anyway. They do bris milahs and they will bloodlet, not heeding Rav Papa's observation or advice. The doshu ba rabim, that it's become customary for people. Doshu literally means the people trample. In other words, the people have become accustomed to doing these things anyway. Shemer psoyim Hashem, the Almighty watches over the psoyim. The word psoyim, or in singular the word pesi, is someone that's mindless, someone that's a fool. The Almighty watches over the fools. Tanu Rabbanan, Kol Oisin Arboim Shana, Shoyis Rabba Midbar, all the 40 years that the Jews were in the desert, Lo Hoyo Yoim Shalonoshva Boy Ruach Svonis Bechatzia Laila. there wasn't a day that the northerly wind did not blow at midnight. In other words, even though we said above that during the 40 years the northerly wind did not blow, but the emphasis was during the daytime. The northerly wind did blow, though, every midnight. Shenemar vayi b'chatzi alaylo v'ashem hiko kol b'chor v'chulei. The pasuk cited by this Tanaic source says that it was at midnight that the Kodesh Baruch Hu, the Almighty, smote all the Egyptian firstborn. So you might ask, very nice that he smote the Egyptian firstborn at midnight. What's the connection between that and the northerly wind? My Talmud, how do you see the point of the source from this pasuk? The Gemara answers, Hakamashmalan. What we see from this pasuk is the following: the Ace Rotzain Milsahi, that it's a time of heavenly compassion. In other words, the smiting of the firstborn was essentially the event that led to the redemption of the Jewish people in the final sense. So that it's an expression of compassion for the Jewish people. So that the midnight represents a time of compassion. And since it is an Ace Rotzain, that's also a time for this compassionate type wind. The wind that provides comfort to blow. As you can see, we have a slash mark indicating that that which follows is a new trend of thought. On the side of the Gemara, under the Nosei, the topic heading, we've written the following. Dinoi shel Rav Huna. The Gemara will focus on Rav Huna's halacha, moshuch. A moshuch is an individual that was circumcised, a man that was circumcised, but the foreskin, which is generally in a standard circumcision, is drawn back. Here it was drawn forward, covering the tip, covering the end of the male organ, so that a person who's a moshuch could give the impression that he hasn't been circumcised. So that, once again, he has been circumcised, but the foreskin was drawn back over. So we continue in our note on the side, Devar Torah, on a Torah level, Eichel Betruma. He has the right to eat Truma, the tithe that is given to Kehanim. Even though Kehanim, and as we've seen in previous sukkis, a Kehain who has not been circumcised is forbidden in Truma consumption, this person has been circumcised. So on a Torah level, he's entitled to eat Truma. Midrabbanan, however, on a rabbinic level, the rabbis impose additional restrictions many times that the Torah itself doesn't provide for. The Rabbanan Gozru, Mipnei Shenira Korel, they made a rabbinic restriction regarding a moshuch's eating of truma, because it gives the impression of being an orel, a person uncircumcised. Now that's Rav Huna's halacha. As the Gemara unfolds, we will see some geometric shapes in the house form. Under our mivneh heading, you'll notice that the house shape represents kushos al Rav Huna. These are questions on Rav Huna, b'shnei kivunim, from two directions. What did Rav Huna say? Rav Huna said that the moshuch is allowed on a Torah level, restricted on a rabbinic level. The two directions of the questions are from both extremes. Royim, with the house point facing up, our note continues, Royim she'osur min hadin, that by letter of the law, the moshuch cannot eat. Unlike Rav Huna, who said by letter of the law he can eat. The inverted house that we'll see later indicates Royin Shemuter Ligamri, that the Moshuch is totally allowed. So now the Gemara. Omar Rav Huna, Devar Torah, from a Torah perspective, Moshuch Oichel Betruma, Umidivrayim Gozru Olov, Mitnei Shinirakol, on a rabbinic level, though there is a restriction, because he looks like someone who is uncircumcised. Meisvei, Moshuch Tzorach Shimo. Here we have a Tanaic source that says that the Moshuch needs to circumcise himself, indicating that he's uncircumcised, which would indicate, not like Rav Huna, who said that he on a Torah level he is considered circumcised. So Gemara says, as far as this source is concerned, there's no big question. Midrabbanan, he has to circumcise himself. He has to again experience a cutting of the foreskin on a rabbinic level. Now this answer is seemingly very obvious. This leads the Gemara in the bracketed section to question what was the Havamina, what was the thinking of the one introducing this question in the first place when the answer appears so obvious. Just notice structurally the length of the bracketed section. Use your bracket length indicator to the side of the Gemara text. At the end of this bracket length indicator, we have a mesvei, an inverted house, where again we'll be asking on Rav Huna, where it seems that the moshuch is totally allowed in truma consumption. And that will result in the Gemara's refutation of Rav Huna. Now that the structure hopefully is clear, let's go through the bracketed section where the Gemara asks, Udekori law, my kori law. Hatsorich katani. The source that we just read, the three word source, said that Moshech needs to circumcise them. The fact that the word sorich appeared in that source indicates that it's a rabbinic expectation. The source did not read that a moshuch is an orel, that a moshuch is an uncircumcised person. It said that the moshuch needs to circumcise himself, indicating that's a rabbinic expectation. And the language of the source seems so obvious that there wasn't even room for asking a question from that source in the first place. The Gemara answers, and here we have a long answer. That's the tuf that you see encircled. All of these lines are an answer. Ka'ta'i b'seifa. The one who was asking the question based his question, or made his mistake, based on the seifa, the continuation of the source. So let's read in the frame section here the continuation of that very source. It says, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, lo yimoil mibnei shesakona I lo. Rabbi Yehuda says that the moshuch should not do a second circumcision because that can endanger him. Omru lo, so the rabbis who disagreed with Rabbi Yehuda responded, v'halo harbei molu bimei ben kuziva. There are many moshuchs that in the time of ben kuziva. Ben kuziva is associated with the more famous name Bar Kochva, but the rabbi said that many in that era who had been moshuchs did a second circumcision, validu bonim ubonos, and they bore many children, sons and daughters, shenemar himoyimo, and that double expression in the Torah says afilu mea pa'amim, even if it's necessary 100 times to recircumcise. We omer, another pasuk says es brisi hefar. The pasuk indicates those that abrogated the covenant, the through circumcision. In other words, the covenant of circumcision was abrogated. The rabba is a moshuch. This pasuk comes to include the moshuch, one who drew the foreskin back over his circumcised organ. My vi omer, what does the second pasuk add? The chitema hahimol yimol. You might have thought that if I had just the double expression verse, it's coming to tell me, l'rabba sitzinam akvinas amila, that it's coming to include a situation where an initial circumcision was done, but it was not complete, where the initial circumcision was not complete, because sitzin are strips of skin that remained on the male organ had not been removed. So that's the reason the Torah says a double expression, meaning do the mila again, so to speak, because the original mila was incomplete. But a complete mila that was done initially and simply the foreskin was drawn back over, I wouldn't know. Toshma, therefore, the second pasuk is cited in the source as brisi hefar, l'rabos as hamoshuch. This pasuk tells me that we include the moshuch. So, Hu Savar means the original questioner, where the house marking appeared above, that questioner, when he was challenging Rav Huna, he thought, Midkonosiv law hashas kra, from the fact that the Gemara brought a posuk for the Moshech, the posuk as Brisi Hefar, da'oiraisa hi, that the need for a second circumcision is on a from a Torah perspective. Velohi, and the Gemara here clarifies that understanding was incomplete, was incorrect. Midarabonon, the need for a second cutting in the case of a Moshech is only rabbinic. Ukra asmachta bi'alma, and the pasuk is merely a reference point for the rabbis to formulate the halacha, but not an actual source for that ruling. So what we have done in the last number of lines in the bracketed section, we simply explained what the thinking of the one who answered, who asked the question, what his thinking was in asking the question. So he was misled by the fact that in the Seifa, a pasuk was cited to allude to the Moshech, when in the final analysis it's only an allusion to, but not an actual scriptural source for Moshech. And when we say for Moshech, we're speaking in short form. It means for the Moshech to require a second second cutting. Meisvei. Again, a question, and notice it's a long question. We raise on Rav Huna. The source says, Tumtum ein oichel betruma. A Tumtum is an individual, we've mentioned him in the past, whose gender identification organs are covered over. So it might be a male who we can't see as such, but if he is a male, if the tumtum is a male, so he's uncircumcised, so he cannot eat from truma. Nosha v'avodav oichlin. If he has a wife or servants, they can eat truma. Moshuch v'noilik shumol, a moshuch or someone born already circumcised, hare elu oichlim. They are entitled to eat truma. Androgynous oichel betruma, vein oichel bekotchim. An androgynous is a person who has a double set of organs of gender. He appears to be male and female, and his male organ has been circumcised. So he's allowed to eat truma, but he cannot eat from kotche kotchim. From when it says kotchim means sacrifices that are of the high level sanctity, because those are limited to men, and the androgynous is not classified as a straightforward male. We can say that it's a soft. There's a possibility that it's really a woman, and women kohanim, women folk from kohanim families, do not eat from kotche kotchim. Tumtum einu oichel lo betruma v'lo bekotchim. And now we have this closing line of the source, which is seemingly repetitious, because the opening of the source says also tumtum ein oichel betruma. Here it says again that he doesn't eat truma nor kotchim. Kotoni mihas. We have, however, a statement in this source: moshuch v'noilik shumol hare elu oichlin. We dashed underline the main words moshuch and oichlin. A moshuch does eat from truma. T'yufta. The Rav Huna, this would be a is this a refutation of Rav Huna? Tiyufto, yes, it is. Because Rav Huna claimed that the Moshuch on a rabbinic level does not eat, and this source doesn't indicate any restriction whatsoever. We have another section that you'll find in brackets. On the side, we have an explanation where the star appears. The note reads, Achrei HaSugrayim, after the brackets, HaGemara Chozeres L'tiaches L'Rav Huna V'dino Moshuch, and the Gemara will return to a discussion concerning Rav Huna's point and his halacha regarding the Moshuch. B'soch HaSugrayim Divrei HaBrais Shuleo V'meisvei Tumtum Einochel. Within the bracketed section, the Gemara will explain, will relate to the source that was cited above, beginning with the words Tumtum Einochel B'Truma.
So hopefully the structure is clear. If we just skip a moment the bracketed section, the Gemara afterwards, where you can see the bracket length indicator leads you to the third line from the bottom. The Gemara there in the middle of the line reads, Lemo Kitanoi. That means, shall we say that Rav Huna's statement is actually a machloikas tanoim, a tanei controversy. So that's essentially a question that the Gemara poses. Shall we set up Rav Huna as a tanei controversy? And that is a question, it's a long question, taking you to the third line from the top of Amud Beis. But before we get to that, we'll go over the bracketed section, Omamar. Here we quote from the Reisha, the beginning of the source that was featured several lines up with where the inverted house appeared. It's Omamar means a quote from that which we said earlier. Tumtum Einoi Oichel Betruma Noshav Vavodov Oichlim. The Tumtum himself doesn't eat from Truma, but his wives, if he has a wife, or his slaves, will eat. The Gemara asks a question that lasts a couple of lines. Noshav letumtum mina le. A Tumtum, where does he have a wife? How does he get a wife? Ilema de Kodesh desanyo. If you say that, well, he was Mekadesh, a woman. You have a Kohen. This man, this individual's father was a Kohen, and he offered money to a woman in anticipation of marrying her. The source says, Tumtum Shekidesh Kedushav Kedushin. A Tumtum, again, his gender is not clear to us. If he offers money to a woman, so she's considered married. Niskadesh Kedushav Kedushin. If someone offered it money, the Tumtum money, maybe it's a woman. So the marriage is a marriage. Maybe it was just for those who might be new to Torah learning, let us just indicate that in marriage, the procedure that the Torah prescribes is the man, he initiates, he offers the money, the marriage money, to the woman. He offers her. He is said to be koneh. Sometimes the term acquire is used. Nowadays, as this recording is being made, there's some people that are that are overly sensitive to certain expressions, and when we speak about a man acquiring the woman, so they get some kind of wrong impression that it's just buying a slave or something like that, when nothing could be further from the truth. But it indicates an agreement, an obligation, a mutual obligation that is clinched at that moment when the money offered by the man is received by the woman. Now the Tumtum, it's not clear what its gender is. So we just read a source that says the Tumtum, if it initiates marriage, so it's the deal is clinched. And if it is the receiver of marriage, the deal is clinched. So we asked before, where do you have a source for a Tumtum having a wife? So, and if you say it's from this source, well, Amar, the Amar Luchum of the Gemara continues, says that we say that a Tumtum clinches a marriage or can be married, that's only with regard to stringencies that are involved. Lekula mi amrinon, that a Tumtum can marry a woman with the leniencies that go along with that. And in this case, let's be specific. That a Tumtum who's the child of a Kohen enables the wife that he acquires to eat from Truma, that's a leniency. That here a woman previously, she was not from a Kohen family, she was not able to eat Truma. And now as a result of marrying the Tumtum, so she is able to eat Truma. That's a leniency. So whoever said that the indication from this source that a Tumtum can clinch a marriage has... that leads to leniencies. That can't be. Safek Ishahu. It could be that the Tumtum itself is a woman. Vein Isha Mekadeshes Isha. A woman doesn't marry a woman. Of course, again, as this recording is being made, there's a society which, a secular non-Torah society which might think otherwise, but that aside, there is no such thing in halacha, in Torah law, as a woman marrying a woman. So how can the source where the brackets began, which is a quote from the earlier source, which said that a Tumtum's wife eats Truma, Omar Abaye. So Abaye explains what that source was referring to. Kishebeitzov nikoros mibachutz. You're dealing with an individual whose beitzov means testicles. So that even though it couldn't be circumcised, because the organ itself is covered over, however, the gender is clear. The gender being a male. Hence, that's the beitzov nikoros. Nikoros means are recognizable from outside, from us looking upon him. And therefore, what do we have? We have a kohen who has effectively acquired a woman that enables her to eat the truma. He himself cannot eat the truma because he's basically uncircumcised. It's the part of the male gender apparatus that is usually circumcised happens to be covered over with some flesh or membrane. Rava Omar, my noshav. What does noshav mean in the source that a tumtum itself does not eat truma, but it's noshav eat? Noshav means emo, his mother. What's the case? His mother was a Bas Yisrael. She was the daughter of a non-Kohen. She married a man of this Tumtum's father, who happened to be a Kohen. That husband, Kohen, died. However, she was left with a child, the Tumtum. So the Halacha says, based on Psukim in the Torah, that a woman who had been married to Kohen and she has children from that Kohen, the children enable her, the mother, to eat from Truma. So that's what the source meant when it said Noshav Vavolav Oichlin, his mother, or the Tumtum's mother. The Gemara asks, Imo Pshita, that's obvious. That's a very well known halacha. Why do I need this source to tell me something that's so well known? Mahu the Tema. So one might have thought without this source, then when we speak about children enabling the mother, based on Zera Kohen, based on the fact that they're offspring of a Kohen, they enable the mother to eat, I would have thought, Moilid Machil, Shein Moilid Eino Machil, a child that itself is capable of reproduction, that kind of child would enable the mother to eat. However, a child that's incapable of reproduction, a Tumtum, for example, would not enable the mother to eat. Komash Malon, so the Gemara tells us that's why I need the source to tell me, Noshav Vavodav Oichlim, that even if the child is a non-moilid, it itself cannot reproduce, the mother, nevertheless, is entitled, through the merit of this kind of child, to eat Truma. We continue in the Gemara. Toshma. We quote now from the Seifa of the source. You might ask, what are we bringing a Toshma in for? Well, we just had a machlokis between Abaye and Rava in how to explain Noshav. What did it mean, the Noshav of the Tumtum eat Truma? So in order to, let's say, settle or shed light on the two approaches, who is more correct, we continue Toshma. This is a quote from the Seifa of the source. Tumtum Einoi Oichel, lo betruma velo bekotchim. And there's an arrow that you can see which would indicate, if you align this with the arrow above, where this quote came from. It came from the end of that source above. We said there was redundancy. Why does it say again, Tumtum Einoi Oichel? Bishlamo la Abaye. According to Abaye, Tana Reisha Orel Vadai, the Reisha describes Beitzov Mibachutz, meant it was a male, and definitely an uncircumcised male. That's an Orel Vadai. He's a man that is definitely uncircumcised. Vikotani, and the Seifa describes Sofek Orel. There you have the second statement of Tumtum Eino Ochel was really describing another case of Tumtum where everything was covered up. This might be a woman. And even though it might be a woman, and then if it's a woman, so it doesn't need, it's not called an orel, doesn't need circumcision to begin with. But even so, no eating of truma. So the source had an agenda to it. It taught me, we'll say, the more obvious case where it's a definite orel does not eat from truma, and even a suffolk orel does not eat from truma. Ela l'rava tumtum de seifa lomali. According to Rava, what is the necessity of teaching the seifa? As far as Rava is concerned, and as we explained before, Rava explained the noshav section of the source that the tumtum entitles its mother to eat. But why does the source repeat tumtum eino ochel? My tumtum. So the Gemara explains, what does tumtum of the seifa mean? Orel, an uncircumcised person, an uncircumcised male. The Gemara asks, Hashta sofek orel lo ochil, vadai orel ochil. Well, if you're going to set up the source like that, the tumtum of the seifa is a reference to a man that hasn't been circumcised, that's terribly obvious. Once you begin by telling me even where there's a doubt regarding his need for circumcision, and nevertheless he doesn't eat truma, whereas there's a definite need for circumcision, certainly he's not going to eat from truma. So why does the source repeat itself? The Gemara says the source isn't repeating itself. Matam komar. The seifa is simply there to explain the resha. Matam tumtum eino ochel b'truma. Why is it that a tumtum does not eat from truma? Mitnei shesafek orel hu. Because it's a possibility that it's a man who hasn't been circumcised. The orel eino ochel lo b'truma v'lo b'kotshim. It's someone who is uncircumcised, does not eat from truma nor kachim. So you don't have redundancy here, but rather you have an opening statement that tells us about a sofek orel. And what's the problem behind the sofek orel? The problem is that if it were a definite orel, so a definite orel doesn't eat truma, and that's what we are taking into consideration when we're dealing with someone that is a sofek. Leimo ketanoi. That which Rav Huna said before, a moshuch, is considered an orel, and Rav Huna indicated it's considered an orel on a rabbinic level. Maybe this is a machlokis tanoim. Maybe he's an orel on a Torah level. Maybe just on a rabbinic level. So this issue might be a machlokis tanoim, a tanaic controversy. The source begins here. Moshuch v'ger shenizgayek shumol. An example of a ger, shenizgayek shumol, would be someone like an Arab. The Arabs practice circumcision. And the Arab decided to convert to Judaism. So he's a ger, he's a convert, shenizgayek shumol, when he was already circumcised. V'katon she'ovar zmano. Or a child, an infant, a young person, whose time has gone by. Ushar kol hanimolin. Einon, we skip the bracketed section for a moment. Einon nimolin ela biyom. All of these individuals who need to be circumcised, their circumcision takes place only by day. You're restricted to the daytime hours. Similar to the basic mitzvah of bris milah, uvayom hashmini mol basar olaschem, it's done on the day of the eighth day. Here we're not talking about eighth day, we're talking about other situations other than the standard case of bris milah, but the requirement of daytime remains. Rebbe Elazar, Rebbe Shimon, Oimer. Bismano, a bris milah that is to be done on a newborn who hasn't been circumcised before, so ein nimol ela biyom. It's done only on the day. It means that bismano means the eighth day of the child's life. You don't do it the night leading into the eighth day, but only on the daytime of the after sunrise on the eighth day. Shelo bizmano nimoylim biyoyimu v'layla. The other kinds of circumcisions, as we saw, a person who converted and was already circumcised, or a child who wasn't circumcised on his eighth day, alvar zmano, the right time went by. That's called shaloi bizmano. It's not at its right time, meaning it's later than its time. Nimoilin, this is the opinion of Reb Elazar Reb Shimon, that those circumcisions can take place at night as well. My love, behol komifli, is it not so that the following is the point of argument? The mor sovar moshuch deraisa, the Tanakama, who insisted on daytime even for someone who was moshuch. Moshuch is someone that had already been circumcised. The source opened up with that word, and we dashed underline that for emphasis purposes. The moshuch, according to the Tanakama, is someone that needs to be circumcised on a Torah level, and therefore the Torah standard applies daytime only. Mor sovar, and Reb Elazar Reb Shimon, who said that he could be circumcised even at night, mor sovar moshuch de rabbanon, that the moshuch needs circumcision only on a rabbinic level. That, by the way, would be the opinion that would parallel Rav Huna. The Gemara takes issue with this suggestion. The Tisbara, explain yourself. But the Gemara does Tisbara, it's usually trying to stop a question dead in its tracks. Katan Shavar Zmano, in the source we just described, we saw the example of a child who wasn't circumcised on the eighth day of his life. The time went by. Mi Ika Leman Domar Durabonon. Would someone possibly classify his need for circumcision on a rabbinic level? No, absolutely not. He needs to be circumcised on a Torah level. You have a child who's beyond his eighth day of life. His foreskin is still upon his organ. He needs to be circumcised on a Torah level. So how can you say that the Tanakama, who amongst other things spoke about a cotton shovar zmano, when he mentions also moshuch, that the Tanakama is viewing them as needing mila only on a rabbinic level? Let us correct ourselves. We made an error just now. The emphasis is not on the Tanakama. Tanakama acknowledges that their mila is only by day. That would indicate it's Toraisa. But the question is, you're on Reb Elazar Reb Shimon. How could he possibly be reflective of an opinion that says their need is only rabbinic? Ella. The Gemara continues. The kulei alma moshuch derabbanan, the katan shavar zmano doraisa. So let's make it perfectly clear. Everyone will agree that a moshuch, that is rabbinic. That, by the way, is like Rav Huna. So Rav Huna is in good shape. All the tanoim will agree that moshuch is only needs a second circumcision only from the rabbinic standpoint, and the katan shavar zmano, the minor whose time went by. In other words, he was not circumcised on his eighth day. His need is on a Torah level, doraisa. V'hacha v'ha komiflegi. The point of difference between the Tanakama and Reb Elazar Shimon is how to look at the pasuk. Mor sovar darshinon uvayom. The Tanakama says you expound on the letter that's added to the word bayom. The pasuk says uvayom, and that vav is coming to include the case of mila shelo bizmano as needing to be done only by day. So that when you have mila shelo bizmano, for example, a child who was not circumcised on his eighth day, the eighth day went by and he didn't get a bris mila,
when he is circumcised, it's shaloi bismano, but it's required on the Torah level. What time of day is it done? So according to the Tanakhama, the vav of the word uvayom, uvayom indicates we include even milo shelo bismanos as requiring daytime. Umor sovar, Rav Elozer Rav Shimon will tell you, lo darshinon uvayom. We don't see something unique in the letter, the vav that's added. And the Gemara now makes a point that you'll see is a long point. Ki ha di Yosef Rav Yochanan v'kodoresh, as we found Rav Yochanan once sitting and expounding, noisar bismano eino nisraf elo biyom. Noisar is sacrificial meat that is left over beyond its allowed time for eating. Sacrificial meat that's left beyond its time is called nosar. The Torah demands that nosar is to be burnt. So Rabbi Yochanan says nosar bismano. Now if you have, let us say, a korban that you have 2 days and an intervening night in which to eat it, the Torah tells us it is to be burnt on the third day. So nosar bismano would mean that if you have reached the third day and you have nosar, it is to be burnt during the daytime hours. Eino nisraf elo bayom. Sheloi bismano, that's, what does that mean? He didn't burn it on the third day of a 2 day eating korban. So he delayed the burning. The third day went by, he hadn't burnt it. So now it's shelo bismano. Nisraf bain bayom bain balayla. It can be burnt during the nighttime hours as well. V'esvei Rabbi Elozer, the Rabbi Yochanan, and Rabbi Elozer challenges Rabbi Yochanan. The source says, "Ein li elo nimo lishmini she nimo elo biyom." The idea of circumcision taking place during the daytime hours, I would think that's limited to the eighth day situation, the normal proper time situation. Minayin l'rabois l'tisha l'asor l'chalasu l'shneimosor. From where do I know that even milo shelo bismano, namely, the child was not circumcised on the eighth day, but rather he waited till the ninth day, tenth day, 11th day, 12th day. From where do we know that circumcisions under those circumstances are limited to daytime hours? Talmud lomar uvayom. V'afilu leman delo dorish vav, even according to Rabbi Elozer Rabbi Shimon, who we saw before in Omer Aleph, who doesn't see something unique in the vav. Vav hey dorish, the pasuk that Rabbi Yochanan was dealing with was concerned the issue of nosar, and in the pasuk it says vehanoisar. So the word nosar is there, but you have a vav and a hey vehanoisar, the two extra letters dorish. That Rabbi Yochanan, that everyone would agree, even Rabbi Lutzman would agree, is to be darshaned. So that when Rabbi Yochanan taught that nosar shelo bismano can be burnt by at night, Rabbi Lozer is saying, but the word has v'hanosar, there's the two letters that are extra in that word. That would indicate that even nosar shelo bismano should be restricted to the daytime. Ishtik. Well, Rabbi Yochanan heard that question, he remained silent. Boser denofak, after Rabbi Elozer walked out, Omar le Rabbi Yochanan le Reish Lakish. Rabbi Yochanan says to Reish Lakish, who was present, he says, Ro'isi leben Pedos. Leben Pedos is a reference to Rabbi Elozer. He was the one that asked the question on Rabbi Yochanan to begin with. So Rabbi Yochanan says, you know, I noticed that Ben Pedos, that's Rabbi Elozer, she yoyshe v'doresh kemoyshe mipi agvur. He sits and expounds on Psukim as if he received a tradition from Moshe Rabbeinu, who received it from the Gvura, from the Almighty. Now, what Rabbi Yochanan was referring to is that Rabbi Elozer Rabbi Dos was speaking in Tanaic language.
And that type of speech, Tanaic language, obviously is that style of Pusuk expansion that Tanoim practiced. But Rebbe Elozer ben Pedos wasn't a Tana. So this style of talk that Rebbe Elozer had spoken, we have a frame around what he said, but as far as Rabbi Yochanan was concerned, that wasn't an actual Tanaic source. Omar Le Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish says back to Rabbi Yochanan, Didehi. Do you think that's his own source? It's his own information. It's something he came up with on his own. Masnisahi. In fact, that which Rabbi Elozer was asking on you was he raised a Tanaic source. So Rabbi Yochanan says, Hechotonale, so where is that source found? Answer, B'Toras Kehanim. It's found in the Toras Kehanim. Toras Kehanim is the Medrash. This is Tanaic literature that expounds on the Psukim in Sefer Vayikra. And in the book of Leviticus, on the book of Vayikra, you have that source in that work known as Toras Kehanim, the Midrashic expansion of the book of Leviticus. You find that information. Nofak Tanya Betzlosa Yomer Rabbi Yochanan then went out and learned Toras Kehanim in 3 days. V'Sofra Betzlosa Yarchi, and then he analyzed it over a period of 3 months. So that at the end of the day, you see that the extra letter is something that could be the source of information, and all the more so when you have an extra two letters where you have, as Rashi say, a Vav and a Hey Yisera, you are to pay attention to that and darshan information. And so that sheds light on what we said before regarding Mila Shelo Bismano, which is required, where circumcision is required nevertheless on a Torah level, is that limited to the day or not? So regarding that, we saw a Machlok's Tanakama versus Reb Lozer Reb Shimon, where the Tanakama says that there is a Vav, not a Vav, hey, just a Vav, added to the word Bayom, telling me the Mila Shelo Bismano also is limited to the day. But as far as the original issue, namely Rav Huna's point, a Moshuch, and its need for a second circumcision, that is only rabbinic. Before we continue in the Gemara, we glance at the side. You might notice we have a topic heading, Orel Shehiza, and we added Mechatos. Hiza is to sprinkle. An Orel, an uncircumcised individual who sprinkles the Mechatos. This is water of purification. It's the water mixed with the ashes of the red heifer that will purify someone who's a tomei mace, that was defiled to the dead. Ha'im haza also haza, is the sprinkling of this water on the client, is it effective or not? Just by way of additional background, we speak about the sprinkling of the poraduma water, the water mixed with the red heifer ash. It was sprinkled on the third day and the seventh day since a person had become defiled. So now the Gemara. Omar Rabbi Elozer. Orel Shehiza Haza also Iksheira. Mididahave Atavul Yom. An Orel who did the sprinkling, his sprinkling is acceptable. Similar to the case of a Tavul Yom, She'afalpi she'oser b'truma, where Gemara is paralleling the Orel to the Tvul Yom. What do we know about a Tvul Yom? Tvul Yom, first of all, is someone who had been Tomei, and at the end of the Tuma period, he is to immerse in a mikveh, and then wait for sundown, at which point we would declare him Tohar, purified. So a Tvul Yom, though, is someone who went to mikveh on that last day of his Tuma period, but the sun has not yet set. What do we know about his status? So he has a quasi-tuma status. And the Gemara points out, even though the Tvul Yom is prohibited in eating truma, if he's a Kohen that happened to become Tomei and he went to Mikveh, he cannot eat his Truma. Kosher Bapora. The Tvuyom is someone, though, that can process the Pora Aduma. He's acceptable regarding the mitzvahs of the Pora Aduma. The Gemara says, how can you derive laws of Orel from the laws of Tvuyom? Ma l'tvuyom shekein muter b'maiser. A tvuyom is someone that has more leniency. He is allowed to eat maiser as opposed to an orel. The Gemara responds and says, "Otu anan lachilo kamirun." Are we currently talking about a realm concerning eating? Anan l'negio kamirun. We are talking about contact, touching, not eating. And the logic is to be stated as follows. Uma tvuyom sha'osu b'negiyo de truma, muter b'poro. A tvuyom, someone who is not allowed to touch truma. If he touches it, he ruins it. He defiles it. So he cannot touch truma. And yet, muter b'poro, he is allowed to process the pora duma. Orel shemuter b'negiya, a kohen who's uncircumcised, if he touches truma, he doesn't ruin it, doesn't defile the truma. So the orel has, we'll say, greater leniency than a tvuyom. So eino din shemuter b'pora. All the more so if we see in the more restrictive realm, the tvuyom case, we allow him to process the pora and pora related matters. So all the more so the orel, which is a more lenient realm, we will allow him to process the para, and including the case of the orel shehiza that he did the sprinkling. Tanya nami hachi. We have a Tanaic source to support Rebbe Lazar. Orel shehiza has also kshera. An orel that does the sprinkling of the para duma water, his sprinkling is acceptable. It purifies. When an incident actually happened and the Chachamim accepted his sprinkling. Now the Gemara raises a question. It's a long question. The source that the Gemara presents has a great deal of information in it, but we have to focus on, as the Gemara will point out after the source. Gemara, you might skip the Tanaic source. You could see the Gemara says Katoni Mias Orel v'sofek orel posel milikadesh, where the Gemara will point out that an orel is not to be involved with pora aduma matters. The word likadesh there has to do with the adding of the ash to the ash of the red heifer that was burnt to the water. Now let's go over the question, the long question, meisvei. After hearing Rebbe Lozer's teaching that an orel's hazal is acceptable, the source says, Tumtum shekidesh. Kidesh has to do with, again, we're repeating ourselves, the adding of the ash of the poraduma to the water. Kidusho posel, mipnei shehu sofek orel. The tumtum, we mentioned before, the individual with his organs of gender covered over, maybe it's a male, and he obviously then is an uncircumcised male. So he's a sofek. Sofek means doubt. He's a sofek orel. The orel posel lekadesh. An orel is not acceptable in doing kiddush. Kiddush, the adding of the ash to the water. V'androgynous shekidesh, kiddushal kosher. An androgynous, an androgynous individual, he has both organs of gender are visible. If he does the kiddush, it's okay. Rabbi Yehuda Omer af androgynous shekidesh, kiddushav psulim. Rabbi Yehuda is not so accepting, so lenient with the androgynous, is that he, if he were to do the kiddush, it would be ineffective, would not be acceptable. The problem of the androgynous is that it might actually be a woman, and a woman is not acceptable for processing Pora Aduma matters. These controversies are based on how you expound the verses. What we have to focus, though, is on the issue of the Orel. Kotoni Mio, it says in this source, however, Orel v'sofek Orel apostle milikadesh. The Orel is not allowed to be Mekadesh. Now, what did Rebbe Lozer say? That Orel shehizah, hizah again is the involvement with the Pora Aduma matters. he is acceptable. And he was an Amora, and here we have a Tanaic source saying unacceptable. Omar Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef comes to answer the matter. Hi, Tano. Tano debe Rabbi Akiva hu. De marbi lei liorel ketome. The source that excludes the orel is the opinion of an individual opinion. It's the opinion of a source that was taught in the yeshiva of Rabbi Akiva. It's not a majority opinion. Therefore, it doesn't pose a refutation to Rabbi Lozer's rule. What is the approach of this particular individual opinion? He includes in his mindset or his way of thinking that an orel is viewed as a tomei. And with that in mind, even his touching, for example, his touching of truma would be forbidden. The orel would not be allowed to, being that the orel is classified as a tomei, he wouldn't be allowed even to touch truma. Before we go any further, let's take a look at a Rashi. Dibar Maschil Ish Ish. You'll notice that is found further down in the narrow lines. The Rashi says Ish Ish Mizera Aaron Mide Rovi L'Orel Gabi Tmeim, from the fact that he includes the Orel to be like a Tomei, like a defiled individual. Shma Mino Dechi Hadodi Ninhu, they are one and the same, halachically speaking. V'afilu l'negia de truma aser, even touching truma would be forbidden. So, since he's classified as a full-blown tomei individual, not to be confused with a tvul yom, but he's a full-blown tomei individual, he cannot do the hazah of the paraduma. Let's continue in the Gemara. We said that the source, beginning with the words Tumtum Shekidesh, that's according to the Tana of Rabbi Akiva, the Tana from the Yeshiva of Rabbi Akiva, that includes the Orel like Atomic, the Sanya, we're reading in the Gemara, Rabbi Akiva Oimer, Ish Ish, L'Rabbos Orel. By the way, this Pasuk is Vayikra, Perek, Chof Beis Pasuk Dalet, we've written it on the side, we've seen this Pasuk alluded to previous Shiurim. The pasuk says, "Ish ish mizera aroin v'hu tsarua oizav b'kodashim lo yochal ad asher yitar," etc. So it says, "Ish ish," a double expression. The double expression will include the orel, and it goes on to say, if he's tomei, it was like tsarua, it's a mitzora or a zav. These are people that are tameim. The orel alluded to here, then is classified like a tomei. Let's continue in the Gemara. Omar Rava, Hava Yosifno Kamei de Rav Yosef. I was sitting in front of Rav Yosef. Now, of course, Rav Yosef, we saw, was the speaker four lines ago. I was sitting by Rav Yosef, Ikashili, and I had a problem. I had a difficulty. In other words, I heard everything that Rav Yosef said, and I have the following problem. Lo lishtamit tano. Lishtamit is a word indicating avoidance or absence. There shouldn't be the absence of a tano, of something of a Tanaic basis. Velisni, and in the source, which would deal with, Rashi adds this information, a source that deals with the contact of temeim. Mago is tuma. Mago means to touch. A source that deals with mago of tuma. And it should say, he'orel v'hatomei, where you see the orel is taught together with the tomei. V'leimo, and it should say Rabbi Akiva hi. So that if everything that Rav Yosef said is correct, that the Tana Debei Rabbi Akiva is the one who views an orel like a tomei, there should be some kind of Tanaic source that would indicate that. So the Gemara responds now to Rava and says, "Velo, is there not such a source? V'ha'katani, there's a source that says ha'orev ha'tame peturin min horia." The word ria is a reference to the mitzvah of appearing. Ria is to see or to appear in the Beis Hamikdash thrice annually, called the Shloshi Regalim, to come into the Beis Hamikdash on the three pilgrimage holidays, Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot. And this source tells us that an Orel and a Tome, you notice how they're linked together, they are both exempt from that particular mitzvah. So here we have the Orel classified together with the Tome. Now, before we go further, we should emphasize that which Rashi teaches. Rashi adds so much here. The Dibur Masel Lo Lishtamet. The Rashi you'll find toward the lower part of the narrow lines. Lo Lishtamet. This is explaining Rava's question. Im Isa de Rabbi Kiva L'chol Mili Orel Ketome Mashvile. If it is so that Rabbi Akiva views the Orel like a Tome regarding all matters, not just Pora Aduma matters, but regarding all matters. Lo lishtamit tana be'almo. There shouldn't be the avoidance of a tana in general, delisni the inyan maga tuma isorav atome, that should teach regarding contact that is made between a tome and an item. And it should say in that context he'orel v'hatome ki hadodi together v'neimo Rabbi Akivahi, and say that's according to Rabbi Akiva. Midolo ashkechon hachi. This is now what was bothering Rava from the fact that we don't have a source like that. Shma mino hacha. I conclude therefore that over here mishum chumro deporahi, the idea that an orel is unacceptable for poraduma matters is because of stringencies that we associate strictly with poraduma. Avliinin maga truma orel muter, but regarding an orel and his contact with truma, that would be okay. We should point out that this reference to Truma is in light of that which Rabbi Elazar had mentioned earlier. Rabbi Elazar came to his conclusion that an Orel that did Hazah is kosher, and he came to that conclusion from the logic involving the Tvuyom, where we say even though he is Osir and Truma is kosher Bepora, the Tvuyom who is Mutter, again, the Orel who was mutter in touching Truma certainly would be allowed with regard to the Pora. The Gemara then tried to object to that based on a source involving Pora Duma, and the thinking being that, well, since he's Osir in Pora Duma, so that would then that would be a challenge to Rebbe Elazar. Rav Yosef tried to defend Rebbe Elazar by saying, well, this was according to the Tana Rabbi Akiva, which makes the Orel like a Tome. And by saying that the Orel is like a Tome, you're saying that the Orel basically conveys defilement across the boards as if he were a Tome. Rav is bothered by that analysis by saying we don't find a source that views the Orel as a Tome across the boards. And now, in response to an explanation of Rava, Rashi is explaining that we don't find such a source where Orel is linked together with the Tomei, and as a result, we are led to believe, says Rava, that this Orel restriction regarding Pora is only because of a stringency involving Pora Duma. But in general, the Orel is not a Tomei. So that is Rava's objection to Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef then responds by saying, "But we do find an orel compared to the tummy regarding the mitzvah of re'iyah. So it's not a chumrah that's restricted to porah." To that, Rava responds, "Hosam mishum demois, that we don't accept the orel coming to the Beis Hamikdash." Is because of this concept that we elaborated on in a previous shiur, that it's considered disgusting. A man, a Jewish man that hasn't had his foreskin removed, it's not proper for a person like that to appear in the Beis Hamikdash. However, in general, Rava would be telling us, I don't see that the orel would be considered like a tameh with regard to matters beyond the Para Aduma. Before we move on in the Gemara, it appears to me that we should just survey what we have seen and leave you with just a structural issue to think about. Rabbi Elazar made his point that an orel that does hazah, it's acceptable. The Gemara then had a Tanaic source that was Tanya Namihochi, a Tanaic source supporting Rabbi Elazar. After that, the Gemara raised a challenge from another Tanaic source. At that point, you might notice that we have the volcano shape around the word mesve, the first of the ma'akav, the keeping track of flow marking, where we raised a question from another Tanaic source. Rav Yosef, where you see the inverted, the first inverted volcano shape, Rav Yosef tried to deflect that question by claiming that the source that said that Tumtum's Kiddush is unacceptable because he's like an orel, that's according to the school of Rabbi Kiva that links an orel to a tomei. Rava said if Rabbi Akiva really is of that opinion, if your answer is correct, it should have, a source should have appeared that reflects orel is like tomei and say that's according to Rabbi Akiva. And there's no such source, leaving us to think that the issue of the orel being unacceptable for Kiddush is a stringency in the case of Pora. Now, at this point in our thinking, though, structurally, where does Rebbe Lozer's original halacha stand? So it would appear to me that, well, on the one hand, we had a source supporting Rebbe Lozer. As far as the nature of this challenging source, Rav Yosef tried to deflect the challenging source by claiming it was a single opinion. Rava is not happy with Rav Yosef's deflection of the question. Does that mean that Rava is repudiating the original Rebbe Lozer teaching? That I don't know. That I wouldn't be able to say, because after all, there was a Tanaic source that supported Rebbe Lozer's teaching. But we can say with a certain level of conviction, and that is that Rava's role in this sugya is simply to deflect Rav Yosef's attempted answer to the question. So with that in mind, you can see with our give and take markings, Rava challenged Rav Yosef's answer. The Gemara attempted to strengthen Rav Yosef by bringing the source from Re'iyah, and Rava responds to that defense with his own objection, leaving you at the end of this give and take with this impression, at least, that Rava's role here was to deflect Rav Yosef's answer, leaving the original question in place. But as far as what strength does that original question have in refuting Rebbe Elazar, that I will leave unanswered. Leave that to for further research. Let's continue now in our Gemara. V'ozdu l'tamayu. Rashi is very helpful here in directing our concentration. It's also Osu Atah means they go according to what they've said elsewhere. Now there's a pronoun, they. Who is the they? So Rashi says Rav Yehuda and the Rabbonon that had a machlokas in the Tanaic source above, where Rav Yehuda's name was underlined, and we saw they had a machlokas concerning the androgynous, and there we had employed a dashed underlining to make things easier to find. So whereas the Tanakhama said androgynous that does kiddush Torah, that's all right. Rav Yehuda said it's not all right because it might be a woman, and a woman is unacceptable. What about the Tanakhama's opinion about a woman doing Porah Aduma? That doesn't seem to bother the Tanakhama. So now let's continue in the Gemara. The Oz du Litamayo, those Tanoim, Rav Yehuda and Chachamim, that argue regarding the androgynous are consistent with what they've said elsewhere. Desanya. Hakol Ksherim Lekadesh. Again, the Kaddish means preparing the Paraduma water. Everyone is acceptable, chutz mecheresh, shoita, v'kotten, with the exception of a deaf mute, an imbecile, and a minor. Now, hakol ksherim means even a woman. Rabbi Yehuda, and Rashi, by the way, Rashi on the second line under the Gemara text, hakol ksherim, kol hatahoyrim ksherim, all those that are tohor are acceptable. The Kaddish Mechatas, to add the ash of the Poraduma to the water. Afilu Isha, even a woman. Avo Oreo Vitome Lo Ravi. The Tanakhama is not including an Oreo or a Tome to be acceptable as well. We continue in the Tanaic source. Rav Yehuda Machshir Bekotan. You see that he disagrees. Rav Yehuda disagrees with Tanakhama regarding the minor. Uposel Beisha Ubandragonis. And he also disagrees by disqualifying a woman and the androgynous. In this sense, you can see that Rav Yehuda disqualifies the androgynous. That's what Rav Yehuda said above. The Tanakhama doesn't disqualify the androgynous, and that's what we saw the Tanakhama above saying. The androgynous Shekidesh Kiddusho Kosher. Now, what about the sources for these Tanoim? My time of the Rabbanon, Dichtiv. The Pasuk says, and this Pasuk deals with the Kiddush. Kiddush is the process where the ash is added to the water. This stage follows the earlier stage where ash was gathered together. When after the carcass of the red heifer was burnt on the Mount of Olives facing the Beis HaMikdash, the ash was gathered. And now following that the gathering, the Pasuk says, V'lokhu latomei me'afar srefas achatos. Hanoch depasli basifa psula b'kiddush. Those that were disqualified in the earlier stage of gathering the ash, and by the way, there it says, V'osaf ish tahor. That's what the Pasuk says before. An undefiled male shall gather the ash. So those that are disqualified in Asifa are psulin bekiddush, are unfit for kiddush. And when the Pasuk said regarding the gathering, it spoke about an ish. An ish, by the way, means an adult, and that excludes a minor. So he who has been passled for Asifa is passled for kiddush. The example of one who would be excluded, therefore, is the minor. Hanoch Diksherim Basifa, those that are acceptable for Asifa, and including in that would be a woman. Ksherim Bekiddush, are acceptable for Kiddush. As we said before, the Pasuk said, V'osaf Ish, that is to the exclusion of a koton. Now the word ish, though it means male in general, it does not exclude a female, because the Pasuk used the word tahor. Tahor means the ish tahor. And Rashi says, explains the source of the Tanakhama, tahor includes, is machshir, a woman. we continue in the Gemara. So that establishes the reasoning behind the Tana Kamma, excluding the minor, including the woman as kosher, as acceptable. The Rebbe Yehuda that accepts the minor, Rebbe Yehuda, Omar, Loch, Rebbe Yehuda tells us, in Cain, if it were so, like the Tana Kamma says that the Koton is unacceptable for Kiddush, Neymar, Behai Kro, it should have said in the Pasuk dealing with the Kiddush, Velokach, in the singular. My Velokhu, what does the plural expression mean? Just to review, the Pasuk that preceded it was the Osaf, in the singular, the gathering of the ash, the Osaf Ishtahar. In the succeeding Pasuk, the plural form, Velokhu. So something's being included that wasn't original. So my velokhu dafilu hanoch de psulim hasam, even those that were unacceptable in the gathering, the for example the minor, the pasuk said ish, not the minor, but here sheirim hacha are acceptable here in the kiddush where the ash is added to the water. Well, the hachi, if you're into this idea of a velokhu is coming to include. Ishonami. The why does Rebbe Yehuda exclude the woman, include the woman also as being acceptable for Kiddush? Answer. The Pasuk says, Vinosan. Veloi Vinosna. The Pasuk uses the masculine form when the Pasuk describes the adding of the ash to the water. It says, Vinosan in the masculine, not feminine. Firabonon, the Rabbonon who passel the Koton, they exclude the Koton even though there is the plural expression. They explain themselves. Iksiv velokach vinosan, had the Pasuk been worded this way, Habamina, I would have come to an erroneous conclusion. I would have come to thinking the following. Shokil chad yoiv chad. According to the way Tosfos explains this, Shokil chad yoiv chad means the same person that put the ash into the water must be the one to mix them, to stir them together. And that's wrong. So the Pasuk could not have used this, that both verb forms would have been in the singular. So that whereas Rabbi Yehuda saw something special in the word velokhu to include the katan, the Rabbanan are addressing why the Pasuk couldn't have the Rabbanan who hold that the Koton is exempt. He's exempt, or I should say disqualified from Kiddush. Rabbi Yehuda gave us the impression that in order to, if that were true, it should have said Velokach. The Rabbanan's response, it couldn't have said Velokach Vinosan. It couldn't have said things that way. Although it would have been favorable for the Rabbonin's position, because by saying Velokach, so I would have maintained my exclusion of the Koton, and I would understand the position of then the issue of Vinosan in the masculine form would have been there to justify, we'll say, Rabbi Yehuda's position, but it couldn't have spoken in this way. It couldn't have spoken in the singular verb form, because I would have come out with this wrongful conclusion that the same person that puts the ash in has to be the one to stir it together, which isn't true. Therefore, Kosav Rachmona Velokhu. The plural form was used, but not to include the Koton, and that's what we have to emphasize within the Rabbonon. And had the Torah used the double verb form in plural, both verbs in plural, and again according to Rabbi Yehuda, the Torah had said v'nosan, which Rabbi Yehuda saw as a reason for excluding the woman, the Rabbanan say couldn't have spoken in that form either. I want, says the Rabbanan, I want to include the woman, but nevertheless the word v'nosan had to be used. It couldn't have said v'nosnu. Had it said v'lochu v'nosnu, havamino deshakli trey v'avi trey, would have come out to a second wrongful inclusion, that two people must take the ash and two people must mix it, which is also incorrect. Kosav rachmona v'lochu v'nosan. Therefore, the Torah used this also differentiated verb form, v'lochu in the plural, v'nosan in the singular, to tell me dafilu shakli trei v'yohiv chad. Even if two people are involved with the taking of the ash and putting it in the water, and the mixing, and one is involved with the mixing together, that's also acceptable. So what we've seen so far is how Rabbi Yehuda saw the basis of his reasoning. He saw that in the unique verb forms, singular, plural, and the Rabbonim say that it pasuk had to be worded v'lochu v'nosan so as to avoid this other wrongful conclusion, but not as a basis for coming to the results or the conclusions of Rabbi Yehuda. The Gemara continues at the top of Ayin Gimel Amud Aleph. V'hizah hatahor ala tomei. The word hatahor is emphasized right now, and we learn from this tahor michlal shehu tomei. Now Rashi at the top adds hatahor shetiharti loch kan, the one who I accept as being tor, but only over here I'm considering him tor. Michlal shu tomei ledover achir, indicating that for other things he would not be considered tor, he'd be considered defiled. Kadon tvul yom shetomei letruma. An example of this is someone who was a tvul yom. He is not allowed to eat truma. He's not allowed to touch truma. So that the word tahor is indicating a phenomenon of this nature. As the Gemara says, tahor, michlal shu tomei. Tahor, he's tor over here for the paraduma purposes. But for other things, he would not be considered tahor. Limeid al tvul yom shekosher bepar. This teaches us that a person who is a tvul yom is acceptable for the paraduma. Even though for other matters where the Torah insists on purity, a tvul yom is considered tomei, not so with regard to the paraduma. We might want to point out parenthetically that the Torah here has this, we'll call it leniency, with regard to paraduma. This gave rise to the Chachomim worrying that since regarding this area of paraduma, the hazah, where we allow a tvul yom to do the hazah, or we allow the tvul yom to be involved with the preparation of the paraduma, we find that there are many other aspects of paraduma where we insist on extreme severity. All of those areas are rabbinic, where they imposed a number of stringencies surrounding the matter of paraduma because of this area of leniency that the Torah allows for. That itself is a very broad topic, but not for now. At this point, we want to remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.